100 Years' War, the Crecy Period. Edward prepares to invade France in 1346, Part 2. Now, we know Edward is good at making plans, but we also know that getting everybody together is always a hassle for England, and this is not going to be any different. Now, in spite of the burdens which the English were being asked to bear, resistance was muted. There were, some barrages of propaganda from the government from January of 1346 onwards. Englishmen, for example, were warned in proclamations and officially inspired sermons about the French king's determination to reject every offer that was made to him, when in fact the English made no offers other than basically having him give up the crown, about his incitement of the Scots, and about Philip's aggressive designs against the English language and the English life of the nation. So, pretty good propaganda. Propaganda is propaganda. Now, the news of French naval plans were broadcast across the realm as soon as it was received. Whether the people believed it is difficult to say. Probably most people did. And without a doubt, it softened the impact of the fresh burdens and hardships put on them by persuading Englishmen to look upon the war as part of the ordinary condition of life. Now, that is something most Frenchmen could still not bring themselves to do, even in 1346. Now, adequate harvests during the mid-1340s made the English government's task easier. Good food or plentiful supplies of food makes it reasonable, and that usually keeps everybody happy. If people are hungry, you're in trouble. Parliament, which was the national focus for resistance, didn't even meet in 1346 until September. And by then, victory had to some extent disarmed criticism. But it is unlikely that Edward III would not have gotten away with so much if the military tide had not finally turned in his favor. Now, as usual, neither the target for recruitment nor Edward's ambitious timetable was achieved. The ships requisitioned in 1345 were supposed to be in Portsmouth by mid-February 1346. Few of them arrived. Now, this is partly due to Mother Nature, as the south coast of England was hit by multiple great storms. The vessels that had been on their way were simply scattered. Others were almost imprisoned in safe harbors waiting for the weather to clear. But even if they had all arrived, there still were not enough ships to transport in one crossing the army which Edward III envisioned, which was between 15,000 and 20,000 men, would have required at least 1,500 ships, which was probably more ships than the English merchant fleet actually possessed. Then there was a fresh round of requisitions then in March of 1346. Now the traditional limitation to vessels over 30 to 40 tons had to be abandoned. The requisition officers were told anything bigger than a fishing smack would do. So even if your ship only carried 10 tons, they requisitioned it. Now the sailing date was supposed to be, it was moved from March the 1st to May the 1st. And then it was pushed back again till May the 15th, all in 1346. So what about the army? Well, the army, which was supposed to fill these ships, took even longer to raise. Some troops, particularly the Welsh archers and spearmen, who were recruited in larger numbers than ever before, refused to even leave their homes until they had been paid their advance. Then a significant number of men recruited, according to the new census of landed income, turned out to be infirm, unfit, and inadequately armed, which is not a surprise. So if you're going to base it on land wealth, a lot of those people are going to be older. They're obviously not going to be in very good shape, and some of them are going to be cheap and try to use weapons that their grandparents had used. But they showed up, which is a plus. But that meant that they had to be sent home, and then they had to find substitutes. In March and April of 1346, recruiting was disrupted by fresh threats to the security of England, first of all from the Scots, and secondly, French naval activity. And we know in the past, the French have done a pretty good job of looting, pillaging, and burning the south coast of England. So any threat there will be significant. And although neither of these problems, which should have been thought of at the beginning, were seriously taken into account when Edward made his original plans. In the case of the Scots, the government actually decided at an early planning stage just simply to run the risk that the northern counties could take care of themselves. So the northern counties, that is the counties north of the Humber River, were left to defend themselves in the old-fashioned way. That means to use their own manpower and to use their own money, with limited possibility of any financial help from Edward's government. Now the border lords, Lucy, Neville, Percy, Seagrave, Mowbray, and others, agreed with the government that they would expand their personal forces, and then on March the 27th, 1346, the clergy and the nobility of the north gathered at York to hear from Edward's representatives. Now, they explained his plans, and they promised a small contribution to their defensive costs, basically one half of the proceeds from the parliamentary subsidy that was coming from the northern counties. Well, you know, the problem with that is that money had actually already been spent, so trying to find it would be a little troublesome. Now, the threat to the coast of southern England, although it was exaggerated, was taken very seriously. So beacons once again appeared on every hilltop. Commanders were appointed in every coastal district. And then all those living within 15 miles of the coast were placed at the district commander's disposal. That meant that those able-bodied men in that area would not be available for Edward's French army. Now, these measures alone must have deprived Edward III of several thousand men. At any rate, from one cause or another, Edward was only able to raise about half of the army he planned. He planned 15 to 20,000. He's going to have from 7,500 to 10,000. And actually, that turns out to be a pretty good thing, because he just had enough ships that they gathered together that could carry the smaller army. They would have never carried the larger army in one fell swoop across to France. So we've seen his problems, which are nothing new. We've seen the English people do what they're supposed to do, gripe about it a little bit. Now we're pretty much ready to head over. But of course, we need to talk about how Edward kept his plans secret from the French. Now, the sources for this, the same ones that I've been using: the Hundred Years' War by Nylands, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, and the Hundred Years' War Volume 1, Trial by Battle by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.